Charon is the target, but its facilitators and friends are caught in the crosshairs. On Monday, U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent announced the start of Operation Economic Outcast, a suite of sanctions, economic tools, and enforcement actions intended to sever every remaining economic lifeline sustaining the Iranian regime. In his remarks, Bessent compared the effort to D-Day during World War II. Will it isolate Iran? Who is extending these lifelines? And how might Iranian forces retaliate? Below, Atlantic Council experts share their insights on the news. Click to jump to an expert analysis. Daniel Fried, it's not nothing, but it's no D-Day. Maya Nicolads, Beijing is the biggest question. Andrew L. Peek, Trump's deterrence gives sanctions their bite. Nate Swanson, the war has entered a race to the bottom. Dexter Tiff Roberts, China is preparing a hardline response. Khalid Azam, effectiveness should be measured against objective. Jonathan Panikoff, maximum pressure still needs staying power. Thomas S. Warwick, economic D-Day needs an Eisenhower. Daniel Fried is the Wiser Family Distinguished Fellow at the Atlantic Council and a former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for Europe. It's not nothing, but it's no D-Day. The new Iran sanctions that Bessent rolled out Monday afternoon were, in Bessent's own words, a warning shot, not an economic death blow. The sanctions announced are to target Iranian, Chinese, and other countries' firms, as well as Ghost Fleet tankers and other legitimate targets. But none of the moves was a game changer. The rhetoric was ferocious, but the punch less so, though Bessent promised more was coming, including sanctions on a major financial institution later this week. Dealing a crippling blow to Iran's economy would probably require taking on major Chinese firms and banks, and no such steps were taken today. One interesting tell: asked why his announcement today was more warning than action, Bessent responded that he didn't want to blow up the global financial system. That's revealing. The United States is threatening action against third countries that don't break economic ties with Iran, but doing so involves costs and risks that Bessent suggested he isn't eager to bear. While it's easy to dismiss today's announcements as mere bluster, it appears that some in the administration are aware that a quick, big win over Iran using force isn't likely, and are trying to move back to something sustainable and longer term. That's a rational call. Iran's weaknesses will grow over time, but such a walk back will not be easy to maintain, especially for an administration known for impatience and volatility. Maya Nicolads is a deputy director at the Atlantic Council's Economic Statecraft Initiative within the Geoeconomics Center. Beijing is the biggest question. On August 24, a day dubbed an economic D-Day against the Iranian regime, the Treasury Department designated about 60 entities based in Hong Kong, China, Malaysia, the United Arab Emirates, UAE, Singapore, and other third countries for facilitating Iran-related sanctions evasion. These entities are believed to have helped sanctioned Iranian companies launder proceeds from oil sales, procure sensitive technologies, and facilitate the operations of Iran's shadow fleet. The designations follow earlier sanctions, this year targeting Iran's shadow banking networks by the Treasury, as part of Operation Economic Fury. In terms of their potential effects, these sanctions target the usual suspects, front and shell companies in jurisdictions well known to serve as evasion and transshipment hubs. Perhaps the more consequential action is yet to come, given Bessent's warning that sanctions could target a major financial institution. The rising diplomatic pressure ahead of today's announcement may have already prompted a response. Last week, the UAE said that it will halt trade and financial transactions with Iran. The UAE had previously announced crackdowns on Iran's evasion networks, so the extent of its follow-through will be an early test. The biggest question is Beijing's response, since Chinese refineries have been absorbing nearly 90% of Iranian oil. The Trump's eye meeting is just weeks away. It's unclear whether the financial institution Bessent suggested could be sanctioned by the end of the week will be Chinese. However, with the one-year U.S.-China truce that paused U.S. tariffs on China and Chinese bans on critical minerals set to expire this fall, any perceived economic escalation by the United States could prompt Chinese countermeasures, particularly in critical minerals. Andrew L. Peek is the director of the Adrian Arsht National Security Resilience Initiative in the Atlantic Council's Scowcroft Center. Trump's deterrence gives sanctions their bite. Trump's sanctions on Iran have been historically effective because of his perceived willingness to prioritize economic pressure over anything else in bilateral relationships. The main economic pressure tool available is secondary sanctions, sanctions on foreign entities that engage with an Iranian entity. The laws governing these sanctions were the same under both Trump and President Barack Obama, and Obama had a global coalition and the United Nations behind him. Trump did not, yet he still forced oil exports from Iran to a historic low. The reason was that his implementation was much different. Those entities, including state-owned companies in China, Europe, India, and elsewhere, genuinely believed that Trump would sanction them regardless of the diplomatic consequences. This is still true. It may be even more true today than it was 18 months ago. The president engenders a tremendous amount of deterrence. Bessent and the rest of the Trump administration are thus starting with a very strong hand. The task now is implementation. It is a challenging diplomatic assignment. In Iraq, the Gulf, China, and elsewhere, entities that deal with Iran have been navigating secondary sanctions for 30 years. They are hedged and do not scare easily. Trump's envoys thus need to engage the remaining sanctions holdouts and deliver a cease and desist message without allowing that deterrent effect to get lost in diplomatic niceties. And there will probably need to be an example. Lastly, as I argued on Friday, Iran's leaders will shoot back before they starve. Iran will escalate militarily against its neighbors in the face of this sanctions pressure to prevent them from complying fully. Iran will try to force Iraq and the Gulf states to hedge and allow money to keep flowing. The effects will be limited, since Iran is not exporting oil by ship, but Tehran will try to scrounge enough dollars from its neighbors to survive and outlast this effort. Nate Swanson is a resident senior fellow and director of the Iran Strategy Project with the Scowcroft Middle East Security Initiative. The war has entered a race to the bottom. So far, economic D-Day has not amounted to much. A new slogan, fairly routine designations, and a threat to issue future sanctions. This was a normal Tuesday under the first Trump administration. But let's assume, whether real or not, that there is a plan behind Bessent's pledge. If so, the administration's actions will move it one step closer to achieving a Pyrrhic victory over Iran. If fully implemented, the Trump administration is probably correct that a 1-2 punch of the blockade and sanctions targeting Iran's trade partners would eventually become existential for the regime. But the two questions to ask are, at what cost? And even if the economic pressure campaign succeeds, what will it accomplish? China is easily Iran's most important trading partner, and if those trade ties were severed, the Islamic Republic would have no replacement. But China has also skirted American sanctions for years and has given little indication that it will stop now. Is President Donald Trump really willing to risk the trade détente with China to take the necessary actions against Chinese banks, refiners, and ports to curtail trade with Iran? Is the U.S. economy prepared for retaliation from China? These would be very difficult steps to take, especially right before Chinese President Xi Jinping is scheduled to visit. Furthermore, look at the impossible predicament of a country like the United Arab Emirates, UAE. It is true that the UAE is a crucial trading and sanctions evasion partner for Iran. But if the UAE adheres to the administration's requests, Iran is likely to lash out and restart attacks against the UAE and other regional energy infrastructure. If the UAE doesn't comply, it could face U.S. sanctions. In short, a properly implemented pressure campaign will hurt Iran, but it will also hurt the U.S. economy and, most of all, countries in the Gulf. An equally important question is what this campaign is trying to achieve. Bessent implied regime change. Vice President J.D. Vance spoke of a return to talks. 6 months into this war of choice, the administration still doesn't know what it wants. But there is a bigger issue at play here. 47 years of mostly unyielding pressure have not led to the collapse of the Islamic Republic nor seriously altered Iranian decision-making. Yes, there are a few exceptions in which pressure contributed to changes in behavior, such as the Iran nuclear deal. but for the most part, the regime remains relatively stable, and pressure has not compelled it to alter its behavior or strategic calculations. Earlier in the war, I wrote that the United States and Iran were encountering a battle of wills, and that Iran believed time was on its side. Now I believe that the war has evolved into a race to the bottom. Rather than admit defeat or make concessions, both sides seem content to impose pain and build leverage without either translating into strategic gains. Economic D-Day is just the latest example. Dexter Tiff Roberts is a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council's Global China Hub. He previously served for more than two decades as China Bureau Chief and Asia News Editor at Bloomberg Businessweek, based in Beijing. China is preparing a hardline response. For China, this is more of the same old when it comes to Trump's trade threats. They are usually short on details and, as often as not, get dialed back before ever being implemented. While Besant suggested China would not be exempt when it comes to punishing countries and companies trading with Iran, he also didn't put any timeline on enforcement or specify what punitive measures might be taken. When Besant said Trump is calling world leaders with specific requests, he left huge space for the US president to soften demands or push timelines so far out to be meaningless, something China no doubt realizes. Meanwhile, Beijing has been busily building up its own arsenal of retaliatory anti-sanctions laws and regulations, which almost certainly would be utilized to hit back hard if the US actually followed through with real force, for example, by sanctioning Chinese banks, although that is an unlikely possibility. Beijing too knows that the US is unlikely to want to bring on the economic pain associated with a new tit-for-tat trade war with China, coming right before Xi's visit to Washington and, even worse, just before the midterm elections. China signaled its likely hardline response when the party's tabloid Global Times decided to gleefully commend Canada for pushing back on US sanctions, calling it a Chinese-style counterattack. Khalid Azam is the director of the MENA Futures Lab at the Atlantic Council's Rafik Hariri Center for the Middle East. Effectiveness should be measured against objective. Operation Economic Outcast will create some incremental financial pressure on the Iranian government and further complicate its ability to transact with global counterparties. I suspect, however, that the economic consequences will be more marginal than the administration's rhetoric suggests. Iran has considerable experience adapting to sanctions by rerouting transactions and shifting activity through alternative financial and commercial channels. There is also an important lag between the announcement of sanctions and their effective implementation. Iran can use that time to adapt. In that sense, sanctions enforcement becomes a game of whack-a-mole. As one entity or financial channel is shut down, activity migrates to another, often less conventional, mechanism. Perhaps most importantly, as others have highlighted, the absence of major Chinese and other Asian entities from today's action raises questions about its ultimate effectiveness. If the United States is unwilling to impose meaningful costs on the principal foreign counterparties that facilitate Iranian trade and financial flows, then I suspect Operation Economic Outcast will have a more limited economic impact. Ultimately, the effectiveness of these sanctions should be measured against their objective. If the goal is simply to raise Iran's transaction costs and make it more difficult and expensive to operate within the global financial system, this initiative might succeed to some degree. If the goal is to materially constrain Iran's ability to finance the war, that is a much bigger challenge. Jonathan Panikoff is the senior director of the Atlantic Council's Scowcroft Middle East Security Initiative. Maximum pressure still needs staying power. Besant's press conference today left critical questions unanswered, including how much time countries will have to take meaningful steps to further isolate Iran economically, and what those actions are going to be. But what we know is that, in some ways, this policy harkens back to Trump's first-term maximum pressure campaign. Unlike then, such an effort could work, but it will take years of consistent U.S. policy to isolate Iran, probably extending beyond the end of the Trump administration. The critical challenge is that, unlike a decade ago, the Gulf states are no longer leading the charge to isolate Iran. convincing Gulf powers, especially Saudi Arabia, at a time when it is leaning into diplomacy and rapprochement with Iran, to economically isolate Iran will be a challenge, one that would take significant commitment and strategic planning by the United States. Washington does have leverage. For example, it's worth remembering that all Gulf Cooperation Council, GCC, states except Kuwait peg their national currencies to the dollar. And the early pressure was almost certainly instrumental in the United Arab Emirates' decision last week to cut financial ties with Iran, a meaningful step given how much Tehran has relied on Dubai for its financing. But this effort requires global buy-in at a time when U.S. standing with traditional allies is diminished, and getting U.S. adversaries on board will be even harder. It is hard to envision this policy succeeding without China coming meaningfully on board, whether it agrees to pressure Iran voluntarily, which is unlikely, or it is cajoled through significant targeted sanctions against consequential entities. Gulf states, meanwhile, may move closer to Beijing as they face increasing U.S. pressure. The challenge for the administration is compounded by doubts in the region about whether Trump will be consistent about this policy. Their skepticism is warranted given that only months ago Trump signed a memorandum of understanding that would have largely done the opposite, releasing significant funds to Iran and bringing it further into the regional and global economy. If Trump reverts in the coming months to seeking a negotiated off-ramp from the current impasse with Iran, sanctions relief will be the minimum required by Tehran. That solution could bring detente and lower energy prices, but it would further undercut the administration's credibility with allies across Europe, Asia, and beyond, at a time when many of those states are already skeptical that the United States is a reliable security and political partner. Besant said that today's announcement was a warning shot. Whether it will be followed by live fire and the consequences that will result remains to be seen. Thomas S. Warwick is a non-resident senior fellow with the Adrian Arsht National Security Resilience Initiative in the Scowcroft Center for Strategy and Security and the Scowcroft Middle East Security Initiative in the Middle East Programs at the Atlantic Council. Economic D-Day needs an Eisenhower. Calling today's Iran sanctions D-Day teaches a different lesson from the one Trump and Besant likely have in mind. What the United States had on D-Day in 1944 and what it needs today are committed allies. In addition to Presidents Franklin Roosevelt and Prime Minister Winston Churchill partnering closely on wartime strategy while resolving their differences behind closed doors, General Dwight Eisenhower built relationships among Allied commanders, getting towering egos to work together. The real triumph was not just D-Day. It was the march from Normandy into Germany in less than a year. Today, instead of building alliances, Trump just launched a tariff war against Canada. Britain and Europe are bruised by Trump's tariffs, his cutting of direct support to Ukraine, and his repeated threats to take over Greenland. Middle Eastern leaders are increasingly frustrated, too, and Trump's recent threat to bomb Oman did not help. D-Day would not have succeeded in 1944 as an entirely American effort. Trump needs to find his Eisenhower to bring allies on board.